You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, everyone, we are continuing our financial resilience case study. And I tell you, what is so surprising, I guess it's not surprising, is just that like everybody has been impacted by COVID. We all know this, but it means that it provides us a really fascinating look and seeing how people are pivoting and bringing kind of the tools and the mindset of the financial independence community to this process, right? Very few of us can afford to just put our head in the sand and wait till it's all over. It takes actually going back to the fundamentals, going back to the basics and seeing, okay, where are we? Where are we? We had our wake-up call. And then now that we know where we are, what else do we want to do? Today, we're going to be speaking with Brandi Sellers. Her and her husband have this fantastic story. And through this, I think we're all going to get the opportunity to see financial resilience exhibited. And there's a lot to take home from this. To help me with this, I have my host, Brad, here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. And yeah, you hit on it, right? This is the perfect financial resilience case study for this age we're in. I mean, Brandi and her husband have these jobs that quite literally you need to be there in person. And what happens when you can't anymore? Her husband's a concert musician, and one of her jobs is as a doula. So, I mean, these, you need to be there. And it's going to be fascinating to talk through a real financial case study of someone who is living this at the moment. They are trying to make adjustments and figure out how to move forward, and not just how to move forward, but how to thrive. And I just can't wait to talk with Brandi and really try to assist in the way that we can. So Brandi, with that, welcome to Choose FI.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
All right, nice. Yes. Well, consider this a financial checkup, right? And I think the thing that people need to understand about financial resilience is, in a time like this, this isn't looking back, oh, look at what we did. It's, oh, wow, it hit the fan. What are we going to do? And how can we best optimize with the circumstances that are, frankly, outside of our control? This is where you are. But I think probably before I even do that, we need to answer the most pressing question on a lot of the people in our audience's mind. What is a doula?
I love it. Oh, my gosh. What is a doula? A doula is someone who, it comes from the Greek word, serves. So basically, we are there to support birthing people during their birth. And let me back up. Actually, there's quite a lot of variations of being a doula. There are birth and postpartum doulas, which is my scope of practice. There are miscarriage and loss doulas for those who maybe, you know, have miscarriage and some have stillbirth. There are death doulas. There are doulas who literally support someone as they're transitioning out of this life. There are all kinds of doulas. And I just happen to be a birth and postpartum doula. So that means that while someone is laboring, I am doing all the things to make sure that they feel comfortable and they feel seen and they feel heard. That goes into advocacy. If they're doing a hospital birth, making sure that everything is communicated in a way in which they understand, and then they can make informed decisions surrounding their birth. And things aren't just happening to them. They're happening, you know, with their consent. So that is a doula, the long and the short of it.
Nice. Yeah. So, okay. I mean, in terms of a career path or a calling, you know, I'm not sure exactly, you know, how it'd be framed. Like, how did you find this? And what has this meant for you as kind of a career path?
Yeah. So the way I kind of came into this was, you know, I had been in textiles for 4 years and I loved it. It was great. I worked with a lot of cool brands on the creative side of it. However, after I had my second son, Jedi, that's his name. He's not an actual Jedi, but he is.
Don't tell him that.
I know. Be careful what you name your kids, because boy, do they live up to it. After I had him it was one of those things where I just knew that a shift was happening. And so I started doing a lot more like women's work. And so I did an event and it sold out. And it was with a panel of experts. And it was just confirmation that I had kind of gone in the right direction. And one of the moderators there asked me, she was like, have you ever thought of becoming a doula? And I was like, you know what? Actually, I have. And before I knew it, I think I was in a training like the next month. And that's kind of what started everything.
All right. So textiles to doula. I mean, that's a pivot right there. Tell me more about this transition arc. And is this entrepreneurship? Are you working for a company? Like, what was the transition?
So, I mean, it was a lot of, I literally had a very hard conversation with my wonderful employer. He was so sweet, so kind, but I knew it was just time to move on. Like I said, I was doing meetings in the car, you know, with a breastfeeding baby at that time. Jedi was really young and crying, and it was just, it was a lot. It was a lot to kind of do. And it just felt very, it was one of those things that I knew it was time to move on. And so after I had the conversation, I felt lighter. I felt better. And during that time, my husband, COVID was definitely not happening. My husband was, you know, traveling a lot and working a lot. So we had some kind of like grounding to where, you know, we weren't exactly destitute with me leaving. And so, yeah, I just went full force into it. I started in postpartum, which is where I, you know, go and you support moms who just had babies, you help them with, or bottle feeding, you help them with navigating their postpartum journey because it is quite the journey. And I just went full out into it. And then eventually I got into birth. So yeah, I just jumped in.
Brandy, are you employed by like a hospital, by a company? Are you hired by individual families? Like how does that work?
It's a little bit of both. So with being a doula, it's me. I put myself out there on social media, and a lot of times people find me there. You know, I've had people contact me via direct message and say, hey, you know, I'm giving birth, you know, at home. This is my first baby and I really would like some support. Are you available? Or I have some people who have contacted me, Black women who are birthing in a hospital and they perhaps don't feel safe. I've had people contact me and say, hey, I want to feel safe and I don't feel safe. And so that's actually what propelled me into supporting people in birth. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the whole like statistics and Black women and birthing in hospitals and all that, but just to give context to the conversation, basically Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die during childbirth in a hospital. And it's purely because of bias. And so it's a thing. You can look it up. It's like on the CDC. So, you know, that was one of my whys and why I got into the birthing part of it.
So this role is 50% plus supportive care and 50% advocacy at the patient level.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what it was and is. And so I do that. And most of the people that contact me for doula work, not even just the social media managing stuff, but doula work, it's usually through social.
So this is entrepreneurship. You are the business model. It's my time. And I'm just curious, like, I'm not trying to pry too much, but just generally, the training, how long and intensive was the training? Is it a licensure? And then two, on the other end of this, what is the compensation range? I'm not asking you for specifics on what you charge, but like, what would you expect? You know, what's the range for someone that moves into this field because they feel like, wow, this is something I think I'd be good at. I didn't even know this was a thing. And I want to look into this further.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a certification process for some. You can go through DONA, which is a like certification organization. There are others as well, but then there are some where it's more so apprenticeship and training. So with that, you would find a training in your area or online. I think there are a lot of online trainings happening as we speak because of COVID.
Yeah.
And you just basically take this training and it's usually, you know, a good amount of time. Sometimes it's days, sometimes it's weeks, and it's usually an intensive. So it might be like a 5-day intensive. And then you have like a whole bunch of things to read and a lot of homework. And then you have to do a lot of, you know, just kind of like groundwork. And that's kind of how you get into it. The thing to remember is, you know, it's, we tell people this, you know, we're not medical professionals. So it's a whole different situation. As far as the price range goes, I've seen where doulas charge anywhere from $1,000 a birth to 7,000 a birth to 10,000 a birth. There are some doulas that do that. And I think it really just goes into their expertise, their training, how long they've been a doula, and their experience.
So Brandy, this is entrepreneurship and this is a word of mouth business, which means, you know, your service, the care, the empathy you bring. I mean, I would imagine that's table stakes for having additional referrals. When someone's getting into this and they're just getting started and maybe they finally just got their first client, the first person to say, I want to work with you. You know, when you look back at how long you've been doing this and what's really moved the needle, is it just that, just showing up? Or is there anything else that you would advise to someone that's in this kind of word of mouth based referral business to help grow exposure and awareness and be able to build a predictable, stable income around something like this?
Yeah, I would say they use the tools around you. I think there are a lot of people who they don't really capitalize on the tools like social media or the tools like a blog or just all the things that we have around us. I think if we're not careful or just having a decent website, an easy website to navigate, even if it's not like crazy with all these plugins and everything like that, or interactive. It could just be simply, where can I contact you? How can I contact you? Just having those things where it makes it easy for people to find you and to connect with you, I think is key. And I think sometimes that can be overlooked. And so for me, what's been really helpful, again, I try to use as many tools and platforms as I can, and it's kind of served me pretty well.
Yeah, you said something in there, make it easy. Right. Yes. I think every business owner, small, medium, and large, should take those words, heed those words as significantly as possible. Make it easy. Right. I think about so many websites that I go to that you have to wade through multiple pages just to find a phone number. Right. Or find out like, what is the call to action? Like, make it clear, make it easy. So, I mean, that in and of itself is amazing advice. And I'm curious. So it sounds like, you know, this job as a doula is your passion, right? But you've mentioned a couple of times social media manager. Like, how is your time? Like, is that your full-time job? Is being a doula your full-time job? Like, what's the intersection here? And then, you know, obviously I want to hear how COVID is impacting this. But first, tell me about this social media manager.
Yeah. So I am the social media manager at a baby-focused, parent-focused company. And I love it. It's the best thing in the world. I get to work with an amazing team. It is definitely my 9-to-5, but it's the dopest 9-to-5. It's a team full of parents, team full of non-parents. It's a team full of people who believe in the future and why baby wearing, breastfeeding, attachment parenting more so than anything is the heart of everything and making the world a better place and how it just starts like from the beginning. And I love it. You know, I've been doing my own social media since 2016, but moving into this role of social media manager, it's been since November.
All right, so let's talk about that because that's another transition in here. Like, would you say that you got your college degree, you got your focus in social media management? Like when someone looks at, oh, look at all these educational qualifications, like, is that immediately what pops off to the hiring recruiter?
Well, one, I didn't major in social media management.
You did?
I did not major.
Oh, you did not?
No, I did not. I actually majored in music. That's how my husband and I met. But I think it all comes from the same place because it's all creative. So for me, a day-to-day, what it looks like for me in social media, it looks like content. It looks like creating content for this brand. You know, creating content that basically propels the image of their ethos. So if their ethos is creating a better future for people, just people, and they relate it to attachment parenting, then that should be the look of the social media. So it's really, really cool. I get to like be creative in that way. And it's like my job.
No, and I set that up very specifically because I do think that we put so much emphasis on degrees and not nearly enough emphasis on skills until we're in our 30s and we're like, oh, I need to go get the skills. So that's my actual question. In lieu of the degree, in quote unquote degree in social media management, where did you get the skills or did you learn them on the job? Like, talk us through that.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, prior to getting this official role, I had been doing social media on my own brand. So I had been kind of teaching myself I mean, we always are scrolling, right? We're always like on our phones and just looking and looking and looking. And I think I consider myself to be a pretty grounded person and kind of know what I like and what I don't like and the image of what I wanted to put out there. And so when it came to this role, it was just a transition of, okay, so I am now marketing this particular brand to people. I mean, the skill, I think it was just something that I've always been able to do. And it's just now that there's a name to it. I mean, I think I talked to someone about this a few days ago. It's like back in 2006, there was no such thing as a social media manager. What was that? What does that even mean? You know, there was no Instagram back then. You know, now it's actually a job. And so I think it's something that, much like a doula, I've always been a nurturing person. I've always doulaed people in my life. I've always supported people. And the same with this. I've always marketed. I've always branded. I've always done those things. So now it's just, there's a name to it.
I guess I'm curious. So like, how did you actually get that first job in social media, right? So like you said, okay, I scroll. You know, I'm a professional scroller, you know, obviously joking. But I mean, it's based on what you like and what jumps out to you. Like that was your background in it. But like, how do you convince an employer to hire you that first time? Like, talk us through that.
Yeah. So I had kind of had, you know, I had worked with this one particular brand for a few years. And, you know, we had cultivated a great relationship just as a contractor, as a quote unquote influencer. And so because I had already had that relationship when this position came open, I was at a time where I was just like, I'm already kind of doing this, you know, for myself. And I kind of just raised my hand. It was like, hey, I'm down. And I went in for an interview, had quite a few interviews, and it just felt like it was a good fit and a continuation of what it is that I already do.
Would you say for someone that they don't, like, they know that their current degree is not mm-hmm. future-proof? Like, in fact, they can see the writing on the wall and they're like,
absolutely. Ah.
And then, but now this individual doesn't exactly have the next vision lined up. Do you feel like just starting a blog is like a playground where you can start to future-proof your skills? And even if you don't know exactly where it's going to land you, the time is probably worth investing just to play in that sandbox?
Absolutely. I think any kind of creative outlet in that way right now in the world that you can do anywhere at home, I think is pretty darn foolproof. I mean, granted, in 2016, when I started my blog, I had no clue that COVID was going to happen. I had no clue that any of this was going to happen. No one did. But I'm so grateful that I started then because one, it was just a passion of mine. I had had a miscarriage. And so I wanted to write about miscarriage and I wanted to support people with miscarriage. And so that's where it was birthed from. But I think taking advantage of the platform, like I said, whether it was blog, Instagram, any of the platforms that were there, just do it because I knew, hey, these are all things. At that time, I just had a baby and I wanted to be with the baby. I knew that I could do what I was doing anywhere. I didn't have to go into a place to do it if I took advantage of what was right in front of me. And I think that would be, if there was some advice, would be that, like, take advantage of what's around you, where it's foolproof, where it doesn't matter where you are, what's going on, you can still do your job.
Yeah. And I think you setting us up for COVID really is the next part of this, as we kind of talk about, you know, getting punched in the face financially. I know we were talking offline. It looked like you guys have variable income, so you're not locked at any point, but you know, in good times or pre-COVID times, you had a pretty big variance there of somewhere between $6,000 to $10,000 a month. That was kind of the range. And, you know, you have this kind of floor and you hope to hustle and crush it and get more than that. But you would kind of base your finances around $6,000 to $10,000 a month. What has happened since, you know, COVID landed? How has that affected your income?
I mean, for one, you know, my husband, he usually travels and that is like double that. So he's out, you know, on the road, then that's like an extra how much per month that's coming in. So there's that. Now it's, you know, a little less because it's more things of what we can do virtually here. So if it's doula stuff or, you know, obviously my 9 to 5, but then also his virtual stuff, whatever he can do, it fluctuates.
So Brad, I saw you lean in. Let's talk about that, right?
Yeah. So virtual jobs, virtual professions, right? Like he's a musician who is usually on tour in concerts of some sorts, you're a doula who is giving in person, either in someone's house or at a hospital, which both of these jobs require significant in-person time, right? And energy. And now it sounds like your husband is adjusting in some way. You said virtual work. I believe you're doing some type, you're still operating and supporting people as a doula. Like, talk us through, like, what does that transition look like in real life? I mean, this is quite literally in real time.
Yeah, this is good. This is so fitting. So for me, what it looks like is exactly what you just saw. Just to give context, literally a birth client just called. But basically, I have had to switch from in person. Like right now, if I would have gotten that call, I would probably be like, okay, see you guys later. All right, we'll talk soon. And I would have gotten my bag. I would have taken a Lyft or the car, and I would have went to the hospital or wherever they were birthing. Now that we are doing virtual support, it looks different. So prenatals, instead of them being in person, which is where we kind of connect before birth, it now looks like virtual. So either Zoom or Skype or FaceTime. That's what it looks like. So that's changed. A lot of doulas are switching now to virtual. For my husband, it looks like him doing more like scoring work, or looks like, oh, this particular project is happening, so I'm going to do music for that, as opposed to an actual concert. So it's different. It is so different. I really want COVID to go away.
As do we all. Yeah. Yeah. Who is that person like that's it. Hoping it will just hang out longer?
Right. Come Who's on, that people? Person? Who is she or he? They need to go.
Hey, Brandy, I wanted to ask you though about, you know, so like your current doula clients, right? So you know, obviously these are people who are giving birth, like the woman who just called you 2 minutes ago. Like, oh, you know, this is someone who I am assuming, though I don't know, has been a client of yours for weeks or potentially multi-months, like prior to COVID. Like, are the fees that you can charge different because you're not there in person? Are you getting fewer new clients now? Like, what has been the actual impact on your business?
So that's been different. I think a lot of doulas are figuring that out. For me, I've been doing add-ons. So instead of usually pre-COVID, what I did, I would do two prenatals, which is it would involve us getting together in person, talking through birth plans and all these things. And then a follow-up postpartum visit where I would come to their house, make sure they're eating, doing all the things. Now, what I've had to add on is we're going to do, after 36 weeks, weekly check-ins. So we do weekly Zoom or FaceTime check-ins. And then we do postpartum. Instead of me coming just once in person, I'm doing twice a week, we're doing postpartum check-ins. So, you know, and sometimes we have all the things to talk through, and sometimes we don't. And so, and then also for this, I'm not going to be there at the hospital because right now doulas are not allowed at the hospital to kind of minimize exposure. I will be laboring with her virtually. So that is going to look like me basically like this, FaceTime.
Yeah. No, that's interesting.
As long as she feels comfortable, that is, you know.
Right. So there's two things. One is you realized early on, it sounds like it's been a strength of yours, that you needed a home base for this. Like, leverage the tools around. You need a website. You need to take advantage of social media to build your network, to build that word of mouth referral. You should be leaning on social media when possible and having a place where people can easily contact you. Hey, find a doula near me. You know, you find Brandy. But now, like, your landing pages, which prior to this point probably featured what you did and what you could expect when you hire a consult, we'll talk about those in-person visits, those prenatals. Have you adjusted your marketing and your services offered to say, hey, even now with everything that's going on, even with the restrictions of what's going on, here's how I'm best able to serve you. And this is how, you know, I'm adapting to what's going on here. Has that been part of, you know, your marketing to your potential, maybe not the return. I'm sure you have people that come back and use you for a second and a third child, but with new clientele, when they're looking for a doula in COVID times for the first time, what do they find when they find your website?
Absolutely. I mean, now it's funny. I have to actually update my website.
Put it on your to-do list.
I have to actually update my website and my contract, because we have our doula agreements. And, you know, it's funny. I talked to a dear birth worker friend of mine, and she was saying how in her contract, they have a natural disaster in case of natural disaster. And those are things that I would never think to put, but she does because she's been in a natural disaster. And I think now because of COVID, so many birth workers are like, in case of pandemic, because we've been in a pandemic before. And so we have to add all those things to the contract in case of pandemic. This is what we expect, you know? And so, yeah, definitely the marketing's had to change. I've done more IG lives than I can count. I've done more IG stories, you know, just to let people know, like, doulas are here. Takeover, same thing, you know, doulas are here. We're still here. It just looks different.
So obviously, I mean, we've talked about the impact on your business model and on your husband's business model. These are not good times. The reason we have good times is because we have bad times to compare them to. And these are bad times. Would you say you're down to kind of maybe instead of $6,000 to $10,000, maybe down to that $5,000 to $8,000 range, still accounting for some of the variance that we talked about? Is that
somewhere around there? Yeah, between there.
But you pretty consistently hit that floor of $5,000 a month. Is that accurate?
For sure.
All right. So let's use, Brad, what do you think about using $6,000 a month for what we use for kind of like COVID times? Does that seem about reasonable?
Yeah, that seems, based on what Brandy's telling us, that seems fair.
Okay. So Brandy, you went ahead and sent us some of your, in this case study, you sent us some of your expenses ahead of time. So what we're going to do is, you know, we're going to kind of take a look at a COVID budget, right? What's your COVID budget? And then project out based on that, what is your 10-year path? Where are you going to be at the end of this? How far would that put you on your path to financial independence? And then along the way, we'll kind of ask you a few financial independence questions in terms of, are you optimizing different ways based on, you know, where you find yourself, and maybe make a few recommendations. So how does that sound? You ready to kick this COVID budget off?
I think I am. I think I am.
This is the real hot seat, Brad.
It is. Indeed. It's a hot seat.
All right. So let's go ahead. In the past, we've called it the big three. I'm tempted to just switch over to the big four and include taxes in this as well. But taxes, you know, obviously we all have to pay taxes. We're looking for this study, we're just kind of looking at net pay. That's why I asked you what's your take-home pay. And those two numbers that we illustrated, we're just talking about take-home pay. So from that, let's look at the big three: housing, transportation, and groceries. I have down here on this budget your housing cost. And is that a mortgage or rent?
Rent.
$1,800 a month?
Yes.
And then I have a your transportation cost at around $480 a month. Is there a car payment in there?
Yes, that's the car payment. Okay. Yeah.
Brad, I guess you're adding this up as I go. Car insurance, $279 a month. Is that insurance on two cars?
Just one.
Jeepers. Brad, is that? That seems a little high, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm paying about $50 a month, I think, on each of my cars.
And your car's just like giant paperweights right now?
Yeah, well, seriously.
No, I'm talking about Brandy's. Like, Brandy's paying $270 for two cars that are just sitting in the driveway, right? You can't go to the hospital. You just got the call. Your husband's stuck at home. That's a lot of money.
I know.
Huh. Brandy, have you shopped that?
You know what? I should. I actually should. It's been a while. I think it's one of those things that we haven't done it because we've had it for so many years. And so it's like, you know, you have one baby and then you have another baby. And then it's like, before you know, you're like, okay, this is what's going out, and you don't pay attention to it. I'm ashamed to say that.
No, you should not be ashamed at all. But I mean, that's clearly an action step from this call is just go online. You can get in probably 10 minutes or less, you could get a couple of different quotes. I know I was with Geico. I've moved over to State Farm recently, and just get a couple of different quotes just online. Or if you know somebody in town that you know is an agent, that could certainly, if you have a person, at least to just get a sense. But I mean, right off the top of my head, that seems like you're paying probably at least $100 or $150 extra a month. Obviously, we don't know the driving history, right? So like there might be accidents or there might be something in there that's causing it to be that high. But it sounds like just even shopping it is going to save you $1,000 a year, no sweat, from one phone call or one 10-minute visit to a website.
I would imagine a competitive quote would get that down under $150 a month. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of just like my ball on that.
It's funny. We've actually talked about that recently. It's like, we should totally call and shop around, but it's just, we've had it for years. So that's why. Yeah.
You know, you're not the only one. Like, to our audience, if you're listening to this and for you, you're like, oh, you know what? I should probably take a look at that as well. We'll have some links in the show notes for brokerage companies where you can get, you know, auto insurance companies to compete for your business. But there's money to be saved out there. And I think what we talked about is just a state of drift. It's so easy just not to do this. But if you just take like these, you know, 1% improvements each week, there is hundreds of dollars a month. So we'll keep going here. Your grocery budget, you, your husband, and Jedi, $480 a month for groceries. That's like, that seems totally in line. Is that accurate?
That's very accurate. Now that we have developed a system, like a complete system, especially during COVID.
Wow. Tell us about the system.
Yeah.
And this is, Brandy, it's a family of five, right? It's not just the three?
Five. we've actually developed quite the system to the point where now, even after COVID, whenever that happens, we probably will stick with this because it's kind of awesome.
That's what I like.
We have been shopping super local. So we're looking at the farmers markets. There's a farmers market in Long Beach here in Los Angeles. And literally it is, I think, $30 for a big box of fruits and veggies. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Wow.
And then I think between that and then we've been going to the Indian market. They have curbside pickup. And I think we've been able to buy a lot of bulk items, like a big thing of rice for like super cheap. And it's like all organic.
So that's amazing.
We have a system.
I love it. You know, Brad, we often talk about the $2 per person per meal. We have a whole list of meals at choosify.com/meals. This is not a recommendation for you, Brandy, just because you guys are crushing it, but you're following the ethos of this, which is cost per person per meal, right? If your cost per person per meal is $10 per person per meal because you're going out to eat all the time, or $24 per person per meal because tip and service or whatever, like you are blowing through hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of extra dollars each month. In your case, regardless of whether or not you're actually externally using this verbiage, what's our cost per meal per not, like the core of it is there. And that is, you do not need to spend as much money on groceries as you think you do if you have a plan in place, and it doesn't need to be sacrifice.
Yeah. And it sounds like just doing the quick math, I mean, $480 per month on five people. And that's a little over a dollar per person per meal across all of those meals that month. I mean, that's remarkable. So yeah, there is no way we can help you optimize in that, I don't think.
All right. So we got utilities, electric, internet, cable. Looks like this is coming in around $100 a month based on the summary I'm seeing there. How much are you paying for your cell phone?
I think it's like around $187.
I guess who all has the cell phone in the house?
Myself, my husband, and our 13-year-old son.
So three cell phones, $180. Who are you with?
We're with T-Mobile.
Yeah, there's some room there. I mean, it's three cell phones, and then I don't know what sort of data plan you have, et cetera. But there's probably about an extra $100. I would imagine you're probably spending about an extra $100 a month more than you need to there as well, pretty handily. Have you looked at any less expensive alternatives up to this point?
I have not yet.
I have. All right, I think we have action step number two. Obviously, after the car insurance, Jonathan's right. I mean, just thinking about my own cell phone plan, my wife and I have used Republic Wireless for probably at least 10 years now or thereabouts. And yeah, we each spend about $20 per person per phone. So
per month.
Between the three.
How many pairs do you need in the statement?
Yeah, per person per month. Right. So that would be about $60 a month for the three of you.
Dude,
so,
are your daughters, Anna going to be getting a cell phone soon?
Yeah, we have to talk about this. We have like a pact with some of her her friends' families. I think it's when they turn 13. So she's got another year now. But yeah, I mean, you know, for $20 a month, it's not terrible, obviously. So yeah, Republic Wireless is what we use. And I guess the only caveat, and I think this is on the path to financial independence, is you have to determine what you value. And so this is a much larger conversation than just this cell phone. But you know, I'll give you my little soapbox rant here. It's like, you obviously can continue spending the $187 a month, and I suspect that's unlimited data. And if you value that, then go for it, right? Like, nobody's going to tell you to not spend that if that's what you value. Obviously, I think you should shop around and see if there's something better. But regardless, like, what my wife and I have said is, all right, we don't value being able to stream YouTube videos or watch Netflix when we're not in the house. Right. So like, we are not going to do that sitting in the doctor's office or at the grocery store. We're not going to stream YouTube videos. Right. So like, we don't need unlimited data. So this Republic plan that we have, we get a gigabyte of data each, which is not a ton, but it's more than enough for a month's worth of just normal phone use. So we said, okay, that's the little sacrifice we're going to make, but we're going to each save $80 to $100 a month per phone. So it's a couple $1,000 a year. So again, it's kind of a larger concept of you and your family need to decide what makes sense for you. But for us, that was a no-brainer.
That sounds amazing to me. I mean, I'm all about saving money. Yeah. I don't know who isn't. It's probably the same person who wants COVID to stay
and right,
around it, a little longer.
You know, it's when you sometimes you don't even know about these things, right? Like the that car matters. Insurance. You said in the back of your mind, like, sure, you should have made a call years ago, but it's inertia, right? Like, you've been using that same company for years. So you think maybe in the back of your mind, oh, they're giving me a good price. You know, I'm a longtime customer. Like, it doesn't work that way. You know, we have to get up off the couch and take action. And sometimes it's super simple. Like it takes 5 or 10 minutes and you're going to save a couple $1,000s a year for every year going forward until you need to do it the next time, you know, 3 years from now, make those calls or just go on the internet and get a phone quote and get a car insurance quote. Like it really, you do need to keep at this, but it can make savings over and over that compounds for years.
When you do some sort of checkup like this, like a financial resilience checkup, you don't necessarily say, all right, we have to do all this today or it's a failure. It's like, all right, this week, you know, what is the one thing this week you're going to do? And this week, I would say you're going to go get a quote on your car insurance and just make sure you're paying market rates. You're not. Unless your driving record is when Brandy's on the road, none of us are. You're not getting market rates.
It's not that.
All right?
Not at all.
That's not competitive. And they're just taking advantage of the fact that you haven't taken the call. And your cell phone, it's likely the same thing. You don't need to buy a new phone. You bring your phone with you. You just switch over. They send you the SIM card. You update it with your new account number and PIN number. It's a 5-minute process. You got the new phone. Life goes on as normal. There's no real friction there. If you bundle it all together, like, oh, we got to do all this now, it seems overwhelming. If you do one thing a week, each week, you're just making a decision that's going to benefit you for the next 10 years. It's crazy. So, I mean, we look through these other utilities here. Your Wi-Fi is at $90 a month, your TV subscription utilities, all that's around $150 a month. You got kids activities. I mean, if I added all of this together, so kids activities, additional subscription services that you use, you have a self-care category, you have a credit card payment, but all that together right now puts us at $4,576 a month. That is your current monthly level of expenses here. The next thing we do is like, what can we clean up? So if you cut $100 a month from your car payment, you cut $100 a month from your cell phone payment, you look through your subscription services, say, okay, which one of these do I still value? And which ones was I just doing because I started the trial and then I just didn't want to cancel because it's the same thing as with the car insurance. There's just too much trouble to call and cancel. You pay off the credit card. I mean, we could probably carve out another $205. I think there's about $600 in your budget of expenses. There's probably $600 with about 8 weeks of work, you know, one action step a week. You could be at the end of this.
I love it.
How does $800 a month? And like you made the decision once, you worked your butt off for the next 8 months. And now going forward, there's a space there of an additional $800 a month that wasn't there before. This is like what that 1% incremental improvement actually looks like. I want to talk about the credit card debt just for a second here. Is credit card debt a temporary thing because of COVID? Is this an ongoing kind of thing where we just have a small credit card bill every single month? Like, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So we have, I'm trying to think, John would probably know more about the credit card bill. I think a few years ago, we got this small credit card because we're like, okay, we need to build our credit. We were one of those weird people who didn't have credit cards, didn't have them at all. Like everything we just paid via our, you know, bank and that was it. That's what we did. And so we ended up getting these credit cards. I think it was very low. It wasn't a lot. Like it was like maybe 4,000 on one. And then another one was like 1,000. Like it was a small credit card. So the debt is not crazy big. It's just, you know, we've just been paying on it, you know, every month. Like we'll make sure that we hit the mark every month.
And, the payment, yeah. the minimum payment is just pay that. Is that
exactly? Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, that's exactly what we've been doing. So
the card balance, is that less than $10,000?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
A couple thousand, yeah. 2,000 to 3,000, somewhere in that range?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah,
all right, so you got $3,000 a month. Do you know what the interest rate on your card is?
That is a good question. John would actually know that.
That's all right. The cards average in between 12 to 24%. If you're not checking it, it's probably not unreasonable to say you're paying a 24% interest for the privilege of holding on to that $2,000 to $3,000 worth of debt. That's pretty typical in the credit card space. And then you have a car payment. Do you know what the interest rate is on your car payment?
That is a good question as well. No, those are things I don't know if people really ask. That is very good. Oh my gosh.
Okay. So now the reason I say that is you don't have a ton, like there's not, I didn't hear student loans. Do you have any student loan debt?
We do, but I paid off mine last year, which I was very, very happy about. Paid off mine last year. We still have a little bit of John's. I think his is like maybe a few thousand,
less than 10,000.
Yeah.
Less than 5,000 ish.
I think
we're going to go with 5,000. I hear 5,000.
Is it 2? Is it 5? I think it's definitely less than 10 for sure.
All right. So here's a series of questions, right? Now we're getting into the weeds as part of this checkup. There's a lot of stuff that you don't know off the top of your head. There's no reason that you would unless you are planning to answer these ambush questions. But these are really important questions because they form your strategy, right? So you have 3 or 4 different types of debt. And by themselves, they're seemingly innocuous. But when you add them all together, they're taking away probably several hundred dollars a month, maybe as much as $600 to $800 a month in cash flow. I mean, you got a car payment at $400 a month. You've got a student loan interest payment at, well, we don't know exactly what that payment is, but it's probably several hundred dollars a month based on what you mentioned. You've got a credit card payment at $300 a month. We've got this car insurance, which is costing you an extra $100 a month car payment. You've got the cell phone that you're paying $100 more than you need to. There's $1,000 a month that's disappearing every month because you can afford the payments.
Yeah.
And that's normal life, Brandy. So, I mean, don't feel bad, obviously. This is how most people live. And I mean, you're doing quite well, right? Like even in this COVID budget of making somewhere in the vicinity of $6,000 of income, we looked at your budget and said you're spending somewhere in the vicinity of $4,500. So there's still a gap there to the positive, obviously. And I think what Jonathan's getting at here is like your balances are not that significant on these debts, right? I think you told us that your car payment, you have less than a year left. You only have a couple $1,000s on the credit card, only a couple thousand or thereabouts on the student loan. Like if you guys really like redouble your efforts to pay these down, you can free up $1,000+. It might even be more than that, right? Like depending obviously what the student loan is like, and you take those simple action steps of the car insurance and the cell phone bill. Like, I mean, you could save probably more than, well, more than 20 to 25, maybe 30 plus percent of your overall budget, right? Like it's just gone. Like of that 4,500 you told us, like 30% of it is just gone because you really stuck to it and said, all right, every available dollar, even in these hard times, we're just going to pay this stuff down. And then that monthly line item, they're gone forever. I mean, that is just such a heartening thing, even amidst this really difficult time.
That's really refreshing to hear that, to be honest. I mean, and even just hearing, and this might sound really crazy, but I've never thought, oh yeah, how about you go over your bills and see what you can cut out and cut down. I think most people think of what they can bring in. So they work even harder. And it's like, let me bring in more as opposed to let me see what I have and let me cut that down. Cause like even just looking at everything now, like, yeah, even during COVID, I mean, realistically, we probably bring in more than what I said, but it's like with that, knowing that there are certain things that we can like take down. Like John, he must be listening in. He has to be listening. He just texted me. He's such a Virgo.
Tell them this. Tell them this.
So let, you know, you're going to hear this episode, I'm sure, after it goes live. And we've thrown a lot at you. So I just want to give you some very clear action steps from my perspective that I see now. Yeah. So we mentioned a lot. First of all is know how much your life actually costs and what those monthly recurring structural expenses are. I'm less interested in your one-off purchases, your one-off decision points. I'm very interested in the structure that you've created for your life because this will persist for months and years. So what I heard is you have lots of things that you can afford the payments on, that it's working. It's simmering water. It's working. We can afford the payments. If you said, I can't afford the payments, so we're going to crush these and get them out of our life, you could have it cleaned up in less than a year. And if you did that, you would easily trim $1,000 a month from your monthly expenses. And here's the great part. You said you underestimated your income, right? So we said six a month in good years, five a month in right now. Like that means probably even conservatively, you're actually at seven a month is what you're bringing. I'm just saying it. You're not saying it. So if you're at seven a month and that's what you're making, so you can pay this off more aggressively than I just said. Now it's done. Yeah. And now your life in reality only costs $3,500 a month. Have you ever contemplated what it would be like to get to the point where working is optional? Now, I'm not telling you can't work. I'm just saying you don't have to do it for your paycheck.
I dig that. All right. I'm all about that.
Let's map that out. Brad, let's talk about $3,500 a month. That's what Brandy needs right now with her stage of life and what, you know, once she gets this debt removed, how long would it take her to reach financial independence?
Yeah, Brandy. So obviously you're getting on your path. You're new to the financial independence community, right? So you're just getting started. So even the concepts, right? Like I want to go over it with you because there are a lot of people who are listening to this who are brand new and who don't have this memorized or really like committed to memory of, you know, this is my North Star. So the way that we kind of conceptualize your financial independence figure is based off of your expenses, right? Because that's what you need to cover to, you know, again, like Jonathan said, it's not like you're not going to work or we tell you, you cannot work, right? Like that's preposterous. You follow your passions, right? But not needing to work is a wonderful thing. So your investments, your net worth needs to be able to cover all of your expenses, right? Like that's really simple. If you're not making any income and you have these investments that can spit off a certain amount, if they can cover your expenses, then you're at a point of financial independence. So the way that we do it is we look at our, the easiest way is we start with our monthly expenses, okay? And then we need to turn it into our rough annualized expenses. So we just multiply it by 12, right? Super simple. So 3,500 times 12 is $42,000. And now to get our very, very rough back of the envelope financial independence figure, we multiply that by 25. Okay. So in your case, we're multiplying that by 25 and it comes out to a little more than $1 million. Okay. So $1,050,000. Now that is your financial independence figure. How we look at this, we call it the 4% rule of thumb. Okay. So if you have this big pot of money, this $1 million, you can pull out 4% of it pretty reliably. Now, you know, that we've had a lot of episodes with a gentleman named Big Earn from the website Early Retirement Now, and he dives at a PhD level, literally, into the specifics of this. And, you know, he would quibble about, is it 3.5%? Is it 3.25%? But regardless, just for ease of mind and ease of understanding, we call it the 4% rule of thumb. So you've got this $1 million, you can pull out about 4% of that, and it is adjusted for inflation. So it does go up a little bit each year, but you can pull 4% of it out each year to cover your expenses. And that money will not exhaust itself, certainly not in the next 30, it might even be 50 plus years, right? It might last in perpetuity depending on the results, but you can pretty safely assume that that money is going to last you many, many, many decades. So in your case, that $1,050,000, you could pull out $42,000 in that first year, then adjusted for inflation, obviously, and you're at financial independence. So does that make sense? Like that this might sense. Be the first time you're hearing about this. And I know I threw a lot of, okay, cool. So I threw a lot of numbers at you. You can obviously replay that a bunch of times. And Jonathan, if you want to jump in now, go for it.
And just so I'm clear, the 25, where does that come from exactly? Yeah. I kind of have an idea, but I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, it's the inverse of what's called the 4% rule. So basically, instead of us trying to worry about percentages and 4%, et cetera, basically, if you take whatever your annual expenses are, you multiply that times 25, you get this really big number. But practically, what that means is you could reliably draw 4% of that out, which would, again, map out to your monthly expenses, basically. And you would not even really be drawing down, you know, for most individuals, you wouldn't even end up drawing down on the principal. So you have this,
that's what I
this
thought.
Perpetual money-making machine.
I like that. I like that.
But here's the thing. Here's why the small things matter. Like every $100 a month that you cut in recurring monthly expenses is $30,000 less that you need in this financial independence number. So when we say you can afford the payments and the payments that you can quote unquote afford is around $1,000 a month. You're just hanging on because there's no urgency to pay it off because you'll always make more. That is, I mean, we can multiply that out, but that is 30,000 times 10. That's $300,000 more that you need to get to financial independence, which tells us we can't afford the payments on anything. We need to get those payments out of our lives. And then that comes back to like with your specific scenario, and I think it's useful for people. What's the strategy? How do you stack them up? And you have the perfect like example here of like even thinking through that. You have a car payment, you have a credit card payment, and you have student loan payment. And here's what we want to know. We want to know the balances. So when you go back and you're doing your homework on this, just real quick, easy questions this week. You want to know what's the balance on each one of those? You and John have a heart to heart, and what's the percentage rates? You know, just like with the car rate, when you're not really thinking about it, you're not really looking at the rate, car payments can be crazy low, like 1 or 2%, or they can be 10% plus when they're just taking advantage of someone. And you may or may not know what that interest rate is, and what that interest rate is will drastically affect how much you prioritize paying it off. But generally, just without knowing your numbers, here's what I bet will be the case. First and foremost, your credit card. That little credit card's probably got a 20%+ interest rate on it. That is the one. Yep.
It's funny. John just texted me that. Of course he did. He said it's 22.99%.
Yep. That sucker's got to go. Hair is on fire. Got to go. No point worrying about self-care until we get that car payment taken care of. That is hair on fire debt right there. We cannot afford the payments at 22% interest rate. Next behind that, we're looking at the car payment and student loans. Generally, student loans, as long as they're government held, are going to be usually on the lower end. So without knowing, since the car sector is private, if you weren't strategizing that and being mercenary on that front, it's probably going to be, at this point, higher than the student loans. And if that's the case, car's next, getting rid of the car, getting rid of the student loans. We're paying as much as we possibly can extra at the credit card debt until that's gone, paying the minimum debt on the other two. And then we're rolling, once that credit card debt is gone, rolling that money that we were paying towards that, towards the others. I mean, I'm telling you, with your variable income, your ability to crush it, and on the other side of this, you're doing so good. Like, you're already optimized in so many other ways. If you put intentionality in here, I'm telling you, 8 months from now, you're going to come up and you're going to have freed up $1,000 of cash flow, and you apply just a framework, a basic framework to investing, to building that nest egg. We could talk more about that if you want to, or we could redirect you towards some resources. I mean, you got like a 12-year path here. 12 years from now, you follow the course, you keep focusing on earning more and optimizing your expenses, you're going to be good to go. Like, your financial independence is going to have taken care of itself. And then from there, it's like, all right, what do we want to do?
I'm excited. This makes me feel happy.
That's awesome. Yeah, the sun is bright right now. COVID's got nothing on you. You got this.
Oh my gosh. Good. I'm glad.
But like we said, it is all about taking action. Right? Like, this stuff is not going to get better unless you make those phone calls, right? And unless you and John get together and say, all right, we are going to crush that debt. And when you do, I mean, all that money, like Jonathan just said, it's all going to be freed up for you to then invest and get on this path to financial independence. And the beautiful thing is, this is an expedited path, right? Jonathan just said 12 years. I mean, it could realistically be as few as that, you know, depending obviously on how much you can save every month. I mean, I just went to apps.chooseify.com and plugged some numbers into our retirement projection calculator, and even saving $2,000 a month, which, just based on what you're telling us, once you can free this stuff up at a 8% annual return, which is, you know, pretty reasonable over a long-term period of time, it looks like just with that $2,000 a month, it would be an 18-year path to financial independence if you're starting from zero in your case. If you have no net worth, nothing saved. A lot of people might say, oh, it's hopeless. I'm at zero. How could I ever get to that $1 million? $2,000 a month for 18 years. And with the way that you guys have the potential, obviously, to get back to earning when life gets back to normal, that could easily turn into $4,000 a month, or who knows, right? And then you are talking 10, 12, who knows, right? 8 years, something like that. So this is a real plausible path.
I'm excited. I love it. It sounds really simple, but it's completely not. Thinking about, oh, I could just trim the fat a bit, as opposed to, let me bring in so much more.
Change to your lifestyle. I mean this literally.
Yeah.
Like, the only difference is, like, you make a couple phone calls for the next few weeks, and then your life just goes on as normal, but you're on a 10 to 15 year path to financial independence, and nobody knew anything changed. You just put your game face on for a few months.
Yeah, that, it sounds crazy, but I have not thought about that before. You know, because I know for sure our car insurance should be cheaper. It should be.
Yeah.
It should be. But we've gotten used to kind of just...
Well, they're going to get a phone call this week. John, I know you're listening. They're going to get a phone call this week.
Oh, yeah, they are. And they'll probably get it from him, you know? I mean, but that, and...
Just send us a message when you immediately chop off $200 a month after this phone call. That's my
plan. I will.
2 weeks to $200 less a month. I can see it coming.
I will. I mean, we found other ways. Like I said, we have figured out a way with groceries and, you know, cutting down with that, but also, like, having abundance with that. Like, if I showed you how many oranges I have in the refrigerator, not in the refrigerator, but on the counter, it's insane. So it's like, it's no difference with the other things.
And I think food is legitimately harder than either of the two suggestions we just said, the car insurance and this. Those are one and done. Foods are, like, that's just a system, and it requires, like, constant overview, and you got to keep your eyes on the prize. So you can do that. You can do this.
That part. Thank you.
and you know, I realize all we did today, Brandy, is we just took a look at your budget, your COVID budget. And once you understand your expenses, what to do, I realize we haven't talked about how to optimize your retirement accounts, how to optimize your investments. Like, this is a fun game. It doesn't have to be overly complicated. It's just do it. Small actions, they take care of themselves. You're going to get there. You're going to force this outcome. I'm happy to talk more with you offline about what those retirement strategies look like for our audience. If you're living this with Brandy and you're like, I need to get started too, we've actually created a financial resilience toolbox to talk you through some of these big ideas. And to access that, go to choosefi.com/start. I also wanted to mention to the audience, check out the show notes if you want more information on any of the links mentioned. Brad, we do have, specifically with Republic Wireless, we do have a special offer for new trials if individuals want to check that out. How can they access that?
Yeah, Republic has given a nice special offer here for listeners at Choose FI. So you get 2 months of free service for the unlimited talk and text and 1 gigabyte of data, which is a $20 value. It looks like you have to pay for your first month and then you'll get your second and third months free. But like I said, I've been with them for over a decade myself. So that should be pretty straightforward. And you can find all the info on this deal at republicwireless.com/choosefi.
All right, Brandy, thank you so much for joining us. Truly, this is what our hot seat looks like now. I mean, and you crushed it. I can't express to you how much we appreciate the transparency with how you shared your finances and what you're doing. I honestly believe that if you take action on the ideas that we talked about in the show, you are going to create financial independence for yourself and your family within a period of about 15 years. I'm just calling it right now. And that's even with everything that's going on in this crazy pandemic world that we live in. So people listening to this, they want to connect with you. They want to find out more about your content, your services, and your story. What's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, the best way to reach out to me is I'm on Instagram, like most people, just at BStereo, or you can check out my online platform there as well, or at notsoprivateparts.life.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
To our audience, I hope you're enjoying this 5 case study series. I mean, this is happening in real time, right? Like there's a lot of actionable steps that Brandy can take that will massively, massively speed up her path and her family's path to financial independence. And I think the value is highlighting that these small steps, they do matter. And probably many of you listening to this have something tickling your brain. Oh yeah, I should probably take action on that. Do it. You know, pick one thing, no matter how big or how small. If it's scary to do the big things, do the small things, but do one each week. And this aggregation of marginal gains will inevitably take you to where you want to go. We will take you to financial independence. If you're inspired by this and you're ready to get started, go to choosefi.com/start. We put all of our resources there for you. But again, this only works if you take action. Take action today. Get started on your path to financial independence. All right, my friends, stay tuned, stay subscribed. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.